Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
The holiday season is upon us. Yeah, I fucking hate the holidays. My dad used to swing by after my mom and dad were divorced and like bring in a skateboard and my mom would like go to the other end of the house because she didn't want to see him. Fa-la-la. Anyway, so that means we need to do things a little differently on the pod this week. We typically start off with insights around a particular business trend or story. But today, we're busting right into our interview with Nasir Yassin, the host of the Nas Daily vlog and the CEO of Nas Academy, an edtech company for content creators. We discuss with Nasir his path to building an online following of 40 million people, the state of the social media ecosystem, and the future of the creator economy. Wow, 40 million followers, and he has 7 children and acts like an 8-year-old. Oh, no, that's Elon Musk. Anyways, he's clearly an impressive young man who, to use his words, is obsessed with maximizing his human potential. So with that, here's our conversation with Nasir. Nasir, where does this podcast find you?
This podcast finds me in Lisbon, Portugal. I'm here for Web Summit.
Let's bust right into it. For the listeners who aren't one of your 40 million followers, give us an overview of who you are and what the Nas Daily is.
So my name is Nasir. I was born and raised in Israel as a Palestinian. I do not recommend this background to anybody. I studied in America at Harvard. I graduated. I worked at Venmo as a software engineer. Then I decided to sort of create content because creator economy is the future. You don't need CNN. I know you got a job at CNN, but honestly, man, you don't need CNN
to
reach people.
Yeah, I'm going the other way. I was a creator. Now I'm going to the big network. You just busted straight direct to consumer.
It's crazy. So, you know, I came to realize that the institution is going to die. Gatekeepers are like not necessary. So I started making videos, put them on the internet, put them on Facebook. And Nas Daily was one of the first creators on Facebook and became one of the biggest as well. I made 1,000 videos in 1,000 days and that, blew up and we're like humans of New York, but video format. Now I'm building a company, called Nas Academy, which is essentially identical to Section 4, your company.
Well, that's good to know. With 40 million followers, it's nice to have competitors that have a built-in audience. Let's go back to kind of the Nas Daily. There's a ton of people out there that like to think of themselves as part of the creator economy and influencers. What did you do right? What was it? Talk a little bit about the platforms, the type of content. Is there an algorithm for success? Because there are millions of people that look at what you've done and think, I want to do that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think everybody wants to do it. I don't think many people are willing to put the effort. The reason why Nas Daily succeeded is one, repetition like crazy. 1,000 videos in 1,000 days. You never miss a day, even if you're going to the hospital. So the idea is when you make a mistake on day 55, you fix it on day 56. Two is the content has to be universal. Nobody cares about your internal lingo. Nobody cares about your favorite beach in Senegal. That's not interesting. And so I think the simplicity of Nas Daily videos, the repetition of 1,000 days, and the shortness of it. Every video is 1 minute long. And also the format and the platform you choose. I chose Facebook because I believed that it's going to become a video platform 5 years ago. And we were right. I didn't choose YouTube because the discoverability in YouTube wasn't very good. So that's kind of, so format, location, length, repetition, and passion.
And your primary point of distribution, you've kind of gone all in on Facebook. Have you gone to Instagram stories? Have you embraced TikTok, LinkedIn?
Yeah. So 80% of our followers now on Facebook and 20% are on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. But we also, we localize. So, you know, funny thing, Scott, this podcast is in English. So only 20% of the world can understand us. The 80% of the world does not give a crap about our conversation. And so now we've built technology to localize our content to 13 different languages. And we have 13 different pages, Nas Daily Hebrew, Nas Daily Arabic, Nas Daily Vietnamese. And that's how you can get massive growth around the world because there's a scarcity of content.
So you're at sort of the helm of the bobsled. You see what platforms are increasing and waning in influence and power. How has the ecosystem changed? Who's gone up? Who's gone down in the years that you've been putting out content?
You know, I like to think that the tide rises for all boats. Actually, I'd like to get your opinion on this one. But I believe that if you compare us 5 years ago, every single platform is doing better than before, from YouTube to Facebook. I don't see any platform that will have a decrease in content consumption, at least in the next 3 years. Because even if Facebook dies in America, it's the internet in Egypt. It's thriving in Egypt. YouTube is thriving. TikTok is thriving. So I do see, though, that there's a shift to shorter 1 minute content, and that's what we specialize in. And I do see that eventually in the long run, all platforms will become a commodity. YouTube Shorts is identical to TikTok. It's identical to Instagram Reels. So you make the same content and it goes to all four distribution platforms. It doesn't matter what platform you're on anymore, as long as you get distribution.
And how do you, what's the business model? How do you monetize this content?
You know, from the 1,000 videos, and you're gonna find this funny. I made 1,000 1 minute videos on Facebook and I made $0 from ad revenue because you cannot monetize 3 minute long, 1 minute long videos. And not on TikTok, not on Instagram. I mean, dude, the creator economy is the future, but right now everybody is shitting on it, right? Like there is no respect to the value that creators are giving to the platforms.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized I cannot build a business on top of an algorithm and an ad revenue. I need to diversify. So speaking engagements, production studio, I built a production studio as well as a building, making, you know, branded content for governments, tourism boards and corporates. So that's, you know, every creator needs to become a business. You need to get a sales managers, editors. So we built that over the last 5 years.
So you're using your videos, if you will, as almost like marketing, and then you monetize it with speaking or
exactly.
Kind of custom publishing. Yeah, understood. And do you see an opportunity to go to maybe a Substack or Patreon where they've kind of flipped the model? I've always said that Facebook and YouTube give less than 1 or 2% of their revenue to creators. And then there's some people have popped up and said, we'll give you 80 or 90%. Have you thought about using any of these platforms?
I actually built my own platform eventually. We built something called Nas Academy, which, you know, if I'm going to monetize my consumers, my customers, my audience, I don't want to get $5 from you. I want to own the platform. So that's why we raised venture capital and we're building Nas Academy. I think with Patreon, I think it's a good idea. I am a bit worried of platforms that don't give you distribution. I'm very worried about that because in the long, long run, technology will become a commodity and therefore all prices will go down to zero.
Do you think, I've always thought the creator economy, I love the idea of it. I love the egalitarian nature of it. I love the fact that great content can break through and you can bypass the gatekeepers of YouTube or Comcast or CNBC, whatever it might be. But it does feel like the Gini coefficient, the inequality is really striking in that if you look at Substack, I think the top 10 content areas or the top 10 Substackers are, you know, 50, 60% of the content. Do you think that's just a natural function of kind of the best just warrants more? When everyone has access to everything, everyone wants the best. Are you finding the same thing? How do you get rid of that kind of creator inequality, if you will, or can you?
I was thinking about that yesterday. I think you can get rid of that by tweaking the algorithms. I think actually the algorithm is designed to create a Gini coefficient that is so high. It's designed so that it chooses its top tier and it just like powers all the attention to them, as opposed to building a middle class. So the simplest solution to building a creator middle class is literally tweak YouTube, Facebook, TikTok algorithms, and all of a sudden you have a middle class. Then the second is education. Once you educate people on, like, if you get the knowledge from the top and distribute it to the bottom through this education, NAS Academy or whatever, Skillshare or whatever, then you can get another creator middle class. Because the reason why people don't know how to create is not because they're not talented, is because they don't have the social circle or the community, because creating is still a very lonely job.
So to use an old world analogy, there was the cable provider, and then there was the content creators, the ESPNs of the world. And there's always a tension between who has power. There's the retailer and the manufacturer's brand. Your view is that the content, there's going to be a huge power shift back to from the gatekeepers or the points of distribution to the content creators. And why do you think that is? It still feels as if with Apple charging a 30% toll and everybody still pitching Netflix executives, what dynamics do you think are going to lead to this switch in power?
So here is what I think is happening, and I'd love to get your opinion on this. When we first started with social media, everybody loved my friend's post. Oh, my friend's dog, amazing, like. My grandma's dog, amazing, like. So social media platforms had a lot of supply of content and a lot of demand for content. But when stories started to become a thing, 24-hour stories started to become a thing, and we started to realize that most of the content disappeared. There's no more supply of good content for these social media platforms. And the content that existed is just, you know, articles and my grandma's, you know, birthday wishes. That's not engaging enough for a platform to survive. So they're noticing that they have a lot of demand for content, not enough supply of it. Supply is king because demand is there already. So that's why creators are the suppliers of content. That's why I think platforms will need them. And now there's a competition for this supply. TikTok is stealing all the supply. Now Facebook has to put $1 billion to get that supply back. I am the supply, and I'm very excited to see social media platforms fight over my content.
So you're saying now that there's more competition, there's more points of distribution, and that the content is becoming the kind of the more rare commodity. And you're seeing different platforms come to you and offer you more, if you will, for your content? Do you get offered, say, you know, a big contract for exclusive distribution on certain types of content?
Yeah. I think every creator gets that if they reach success, you know, from Spotify podcast originals to Facebook originals to Snapchat shows to now we just started a LinkedIn show, because I do believe LinkedIn is going to be the next video creator platform that's a hidden beast that is just waiting to erupt. And you see it in the $100 million creator funds and $250 million creator funds, $1 billion creator funds. We also give minimum revenue guarantees to our creators to come to our platform. I think the power is shifting towards the creator, and that's a good thing.
So I love LinkedIn. What is it about LinkedIn that you think is this sleeping giant about to be stirred?
What I think about LinkedIn is that everybody, same thing, incredible demand for the newsfeed of LinkedIn. Incredibly bad supply of content. It's a misequilibrium. And that there's no, that network has not reached equilibrium when it comes to content demand and supply. And so they also realize that the competition is now video. It's a video first world, yet all the content on LinkedIn is text and images and articles. Not good enough. Not monetizable enough. So that's why, first of all, LinkedIn, I suspect, is going to become 60% video, I suspect, 60% video, and a LinkedIn profile is going to change. I mean, Scott, I don't care about where you went to school 30 years ago. I care about your latest post when I go to your LinkedIn profile. I need to see it. That's why it's exciting.
And have you thought about product placement or other ways to monetize that content?
Yeah. The biggest product is my company.
So you see this as kind of the front end for Naz Academy, if you will.
For investors and recruiting, yes. So the benefit I get from LinkedIn distribution is that every follower on LinkedIn, every viewer in LinkedIn is worth 100 viewers on Snapchat and TikTok. At some point in a creator's life, you don't just want more and more kids to watch your content. You want investors and potential candidates to watch it. And that's why a LinkedIn viewer is 100 times more valuable than an Instagram viewer.
Coming up after the break.
I spent my formative years in one of the worst never-ending conflicts of history. Not history, but in modern times. Israel, Palestine, Jews versus Arabs. And being a Palestinian living in Israel really is an exercise in empathy.
Stay with us.
Support for Prop G comes from Mint Mobile. If you're tired of your pricey phone bill, you could make room for it by cutting out frivolous expenses, your lattes, your gym membership, your favorite streaming service. But that sounds terrible. Another probably better option is switching to a more affordable provider, like Mint Mobile. With Mint Mobile, you can get 3 months of premium wireless service for just $15 a month. That includes high-speed 5G data plus unlimited talk and text. And Mint Mobile has great rates whether you're buying for one or for a family. And their family plan starts at just 2 lines. You also don't need to get a new device. When you buy a new Mint Mobile plan, you can use your own phone and keep your phone number and contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/propg. That's mintmobile.com/propg. Cut your wireless bill up to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/propg. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Support for Prop G comes from NerdWallet. You don't have to be a genius to start making better financial decisions today. It's not that sexy, but piling up lots of little monetary victories today can yield some pretty significant rewards down the line. The tricky part is knowing where to start. NerdWallet can help. Their financial experts have helped countless people find ways to maximize every dollar they earn. Now, the team is helping folks get more from every dollar they spend. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering up to 10 times the points on every dollar you charge. Their expert team of nerds do the work reviewing top credit cards so you can trust you have the smartest one for future you. If I had better rewards right now, I'd probably upgrade my hotel at South by Southwest so I could have a big fat party and everyone would be impressed and love me. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
What do you think when you look at geography, if you could double down or increase your following in any, if you wanted a bigger presence by geography, what nation or geography would you want to overinvest in right now?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, Scott, this is what I don't like about the creator economy is because humans are not equal. Viewers are not equal in this world. One view in America gives you 10x more ad revenue than one view in India. If you follow the money, every creator is just going to highlight American stories and American culture, but the Indian culture or the Sri Lankan culture has no content created about it because there's no ad revenue. So we have 2% of Vietnam follows Nas Daily, like the country, because we have Nas Daily Vietnamese. 1% of the Arab world follows Nas Daily. 1% of the United States follows Nas Daily. So we have like between 1-4% of countries. I would probably want to index on where the CPM is high, unfortunately, because it's a business these days. So it has to be America or Sweden or Denmark or Scotland. Unfortunately, I cannot believe I gave you this answer, but that's where the world is.
Yeah, that's the cruel truth of capitalism, right? One thing we found interesting about you is that you wear the same t-shirt every day, and that t-shirt reflects the percentage of your life that is likely already over as a reminder that life is finite and we should use time wisely.
This really resonated with me. I'm an atheist and find it motivating to know that this will all come to an end at some point, or that's motivating for me, but you're still a really young man. What brought you to that gestalt where you would wear a shirt every day showing how much time you have left?
You know, when I was a software engineer at Venmo, you know, I realized that I was 24 and I'm supposed to die at 76, according to Google, you know, average male life expectancy. 24 out of 76 is 32%. I was 32% dead. I was one third done with my fucking life and I've done nothing yet. I just graduated college. And that made me realize that society expects you to spend one third of your life just to be ready to be independent. And that's a crazy concept. And then to retire, you will be 85% done with life. When you think in time, in terms of percentages, time becomes a lot more precious. So the reason I wear the same t-shirt for the last 5 years, I have nothing else in my life. One, it simplifies my wardrobe and my travels. But two, it reminds me that every day you can create something, a video, a hire, a company. And I'm obsessed with maximizing my human potential.
But let's stop there. So let's press pause there. Obsessed with maximizing your human potential. So we have a bit of a looking glass into how you're trying to do that professionally. How do you try and do that personally? What is the code you live by? What are the daily practices for maximizing your life personally?
So, I'm from Israel and Palestine. So, Scott, of course, I believe in extreme thought, you know, because the Middle East is an extreme place. So I believe that you should leave planet Earth better than you found it. Therefore, hanging out at a beach in Mexico with friends is useless. Therefore, a life of toil and hard work is the most meaningful life one could live. So that's where I get my satisfaction, because I don't index for happiness. Happiness is actually a very temporary thing. I index for value creation. How much value can you create? So watching a Netflix movie does not create value in the world. It consumes value. So that's how I live my life. So I don't have many friends. I have a lot of connections. I only work. I don't have a wardrobe. I have the same t-shirt. I have a girlfriend, thank God, or else I'd just be like a lonely prick. But you know, my life is very simple. I just work.
And you don't find that occasional weekend on the beach or hanging out with friends and drinking or just... I've always thought that wasting time is fine as long as it's planned. You don't find you need that to make the time that you do work more productive. When I sit at home at night and hang out with my dogs and drink and watch Succession or Ted Lasso, I'd like to think that that makes me a more productive person when I'm working. You don't find that.
I do that only if there is a direct correlation to my business. So if I watch something on TV, it has to be a documentary related to my life now. It cannot be science fiction. If I hang out with friends, they have to be people I can learn something from, like founders or investors or CEOs. If I hang out with people, they could be my team, build a team bond. So there should be no opportunity to do something that has no utility from it. I'm a utilitarian at heart.
Yeah, I think people are going to recoil when they hear this, but I've found that if you want to be successful, the prescription you're sort of outlining is kind of we don't like to admit this, but it's somewhat a prerequisite if you want to be very successful. I mean, I would just describe what you're describing as real focus. You're trying to cover more ground in a shorter amount of time than most people your age, which requires a tremendous amount of sacrifice and perspective. What about kids? Do you want to have a family?
You know, we love creator economy. So the way I think about this is humans love to create. Humans love to create movies, music, interactions, and babies. Eventually, you know, I love to create a company. I love to create a video. I think eventually I would love to create a human. And I think the chance of creating a human from scratch is incredibly exciting. So even the idea of a baby is like, is it possible to engineer? I know it's a very like, you know, I guess I'm being very like controversial right now with my statements. I'm sorry. But can you create a human that is that stands for great ideals? So that's a question I would like to answer. So yeah. By the way, do you feel like sometimes your upbringing shapes the rest of your life without realizing it?
I think you start to acknowledge that as you get older.
Yeah.
You start to realize that, you know, your parents' divorce or your mom's irrational passion for your well-being or the culture you've referenced that you grew up in really molds the clay. And you can shape it a little bit or manicure it around the edges. But if you want to believe in kind of nature versus nurture or how important those formative years are in your DNA, just have two kids because they're just totally, you know, totally different. So I buy that you kind of, by the time you're 21 or 25, you're a little bit cooked, so to speak. It's sort of the basics are there. So I do believe that. Anyways, what are your thoughts on this?
So my thoughts on this is I spent my formative years in one of the worst never-ending conflicts of history. Not history, but you know, modern times. Israel, Palestine, Jews versus Arabs. And being a Palestinian living in Israel really is an exercise in empathy. Exercise in what it's like to be Israeli Jewish and what it's like to be Muslim Palestinian. And seeing that both are right in a sense. But when you see the senseless conflict, you kind of make it your life mission to work towards a world where there is no such conflict or where there is no such irrationality or wasted human capital. And so everything we do is about empowering the individual in the hopes that the individual that we empower can go and make the world better. Because we don't want another Israel-Palestine. No matter what, you know? So I think that is probably the one defining thing in my life that I would, that I'll spend the rest of my life thinking about.
And Oz, where do you live?
I live where the future is going. The future is migrating east, slowly but surely. So I have an office in Singapore and an office in Dubai and an office in Los Angeles. So we're between those three cities and countries around the world. But I think slowly, Dubai and Singapore have a lot more human talent in the future and volume and just potential for growth. That's why we got to establish ourselves there today.
So, and I recognize you spend most of your time working, but try and break down, compare and contrast. Those are three really interesting places, Los Angeles, Dubai, and Singapore. If you can, compare and contrast those three cities from a viewpoint of a young man, an entrepreneur, and somebody who, you know, wants just quality of life. How would you compare and contrast those three cities?
So, you know, I'd say Los Angeles, America in general, has terrible infrastructure, but has incredible human capital. That is the number one thing I'm jealous of. LA is the worst place to live, but it's the best place to befriend. Dubai has incredibly business-friendly resources. It's 0% taxation, it's unlimited visas, and it's incredible quality of life. But they're still struggling on the human capital front. They need more Scott Galloways. Singapore is essentially, you know, it's the best place to live in Asia, the most secure, the most safe. I think Singapore had a struggle over the last 2 years with COVID, but I think they'll bounce back. Never underestimate a small island state that for them, it's a life and death situation. I've come to realize that life is better under small governments. I think governments work really well at small scale. They start to mess up when they go big scale. So Singapore government, fast, efficient. Dubai, fast, efficient.
And what it's interesting because most people with your background they immediately go to kind of New York or San Francisco and a distant third is sort of London. And those aren't on your list.
You know, when I started making my videos, I left New York. I left my H-1B and I took a one-way flight to Kenya, Nairobi. That's where Nas Daily started. If you believe humans are equal, then you got to be everywhere where humans are. And I just feel like, I mean, I don't want to turn this about like West versus East, but it is. I think the West is incredibly talented, but I just feel like we're too self-centered in San Francisco's problems, in London's problems, while the world is much bigger. So I fear that living in SF will make you less of a globalist. And that's the great irony of life, is that the biggest technology companies in the world are based in the place that's probably not very sufficiently globalized.
Well, that's a big criticism, is that the most powerful people in the world are incredibly insular and don't really have a feel for the world. What was it like? You said you moved to Kenya. What was that like, starting a company in Kenya?
No, I started the NAS Daily channel in Kenya. So I was there purely to make content, because there's a lot of stories in Kenya that have never been told before. Then Ethiopia, then Sri Lanka, then India. My last advice to creators is this: you cannot be a discoverer anymore of physical land, but you can be a discoverer of stories around the world only if you take a flight out. So if you go to Papua New Guinea, if you make a video in Papua New Guinea about a person, you will be the first person in the world to create this piece of content in the history of humanity, right? A story of a Papua New Guinean business, for example. People are tired of hearing about the Eiffel Tower for the 50th time. We know it. We get it. What else is there?
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned, so we've got LA, Singapore, and Dubai. What would be number four for you? If you were going to move to another city, what would it be?
Israel.
Israel. Tel Aviv.
Never underestimate countries that have life and death situations. Singapore and Israel.
Nasir Yassin is the host of the NAS Daily, a vlog which has grown to more than 40 million followers across Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. He's also the CEO of NAS Academy, an edtech company for creators. He joins us from somewhere in between Dubai, Singapore, and Los Angeles. NAS, stay safe.
Scott, thank you so much for having me, man. I really appreciate you giving me the microphone.
We'll be right back. Support for the show comes from Grammarly. Sloppy writing can be the death knell to any potential client, investor, or employer. Emails and messages already lack the tone and subtle social cues you need to understand what the person actually means. But when grammar and spelling mistakes enter the picture, it can make it impossible to decipher what anyone's trying to say. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a trusted AI writing partner that saves your company from miscommunication and all the wasted time and money that goes with it. But it's more than just a grammar check. Grammarly can help generate AI prompts or even help you strike the right tone and personalize your writing based on audience and context. Here at the Prop G team, we use Grammarly, and all I have to say is it's made us more productive and made our work output just better, higher quality. Plus, Grammarly integrates seamlessly across 500,000 apps and websites. No cutting, no pasting, no context switching. Personalized on-brand writing help is built into your docs, messages, emails, everything. So why not join Grammarly to work faster, hit your goals while keeping your data secure? Learn more at Grammarly.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline, because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Algebra of Happiness. I went to the Melting Pot last night, which is a place where they heat up pots full of cheese and chocolate and you dip different things in them and your kids absolutely love it. And the adults basically order cocktails to get through this evening of melted cheese and weirdness. It's like kind of like Benihana. It's sort of an updated version of it. But we go to the Melting Pot a lot and my boys just absolutely love it. And one of the things I do is I tip a lot, or I shouldn't say I tip a lot, I tip big. And it's not because I'm a generous person. I'd like to think I'm a generous person. But one, I empathize with these folks. I think everyone, I'm going to try and get my kid who's 14 a job at Publix, and I want him, or CVS, and I want him in a consumer-facing position. But I spent the majority of my college years and even high school years in consumer-facing positions, whether it was a box boy, a barback, then a bartender, then a waiter, then I was a pool boy. And the thing that just literally would change my life was the random kindness and generosity of strangers. I remember the woman from Bewitched, the woman who played the mother, used to come to the Mondrian Hotel with her friends for brunch. And every time she saw me after having a couple glasses of wine, she'd stick 10 bucks in my shorts pocket. And, you know, when you're a 19-year-old at UCLA and you're eating Top Ramen and bananas, I literally one summer lived off Top Ramen and bananas. My crew coach told me I needed to gain weight. I had no money. Top Ramen and bananas, I read somewhere. And anyways, a lot of that. 10 bucks, 20 bucks, 50 bucks makes a big difference in people's lives. And it just feels great to do this, especially when you recognize the kind of impact, the easy impact. So many of us want to help other people. So many of us want to do nice things for other people. And I think it's just an easier way, or a pretty low calorie burn way, to help people out. And it makes me feel important. It makes me feel masculine. It makes me feel successful. My advice is the following, is that if you are one of the people, and there's a lot of us who have not only endured this pandemic, but have actually thrived financially, that the universe is asking something of you, and that is to be ridiculously generous with strangers, ridiculously generous with your employees. If you're in a position to decide people's compensation and your company's doing well, or you're an entrepreneur and you've done well, don't digress to the capitalist bullshit argument of labor, supply, and demand, and think of it as a game, as I did as a younger man. What, I want to pay them just enough so they're happy, so they don't leave, so I can, and my firm can be more profitable, or I can make more money. I'm just embarrassed by the way I behaved as a younger manager. I wasn't not generous, but if you're in a position of financial strength these holidays, for God's sakes, be a baller. Be a fucking baller. Make people's days. Tell your employees that you're committed to their financial success. Not with words, but with Benjamins. When the FedEx guy or the single mom bringing you your pot of cheese that's going to melt, be a baller, boss. Be a baller. Look at your life. Look at your life. Are you in a position to change people's lives that day? It is so rewarding. It's never been more important. So many people are struggling. Just a little bit of extra cabbage can make such a difference in people's lives. And it feels just fucking wonderful. Our producers are Caroline Chagrin and Drew Burrows. Claire Miller is our assistant producer. If you like what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe. Thank you for listening to the Prop G Pod from the Vox Media Podcast Network. We will catch you next week on Monday and Thursday.
This podcast was supported by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Hosted by Katie Milkman, an award-winning behavioral scientist and author of the best-selling book, How to Change, Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind our decisions. Hear true stories from Nobel laureates, authors, athletes, and more about why we do the things we do. Listen to Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.